Welcome to Quad Talk. This is your host, Megan.
And Taylor.
Today we've got, I guess, Judy. what's up? So Judy, tell us about yourself. Introduce yourself to our lovely listeners.
So let's see. We were talking just a little bit ago. I met Megan, first of all, when we worked at ComCare together. I got to be her boss. So that was fun. So I am a born and bred Wichitan, lived here all my life. Proud member of our LGBTQ community. And so now I work a couple of different jobs, but overall I am a clinical social worker here in Wichita. I do some therapy. I work at one of the medical clinics here in town. And so my specialty, sort of my jam, is mental health and addictions. I'm a clinical addictions counselor and a clinical social worker. What else you want to know?
Well, did you have any kind of journey into the LGBT world or any hiccups kind of coming to yourself or...
So,
big issues.
I'm like an OG lesbian. So I was, born back in the time. You know, I'm approaching 50 here. I'm pretty close to 50. Uh-huh. When I was growing up and a young teenager, early 20s, it was not the coolest thing. You know, it was not accepted. To be a part of this community. And really here in Wichita, we didn't have a community. It really didn't, you know, it was sort of the bar scene. Mm-hmm. Not much other than that going on. I was really lucky because I fell into a group of friends when I was in high school. Bunch of our female friends that I still call friends to this day. And we were all in the LGBTQ community before there was an LGBTQ community here. Right.
Cool.
So I found sort of that support and that acceptance in this group of female friends. And we would spend most of our weekends together, just hanging out, had that chance to be ourselves before, you know, that Monday you go back to school and you try to play straight again so you don't have any problems.
Yeah.
So it was really not until, you know, probably my late 20s, early 30s that I really got comfortable with who I was. And that was more really a reflection of me than anything else because I just for so long had to hide that. To survive, you know, and it was something that was not, like I said, not accepted. So, but I found that once you sort of age a bit and now that I'm almost 50 and I'm kind of like in that effort stage, I don't really think much about other people's opinions of me.
The other day, Joyce and I were actually talking about that effort stage. Mm-hmm. I think even in your 20s and 30s, 40s, it's just progression of effort. I don't even care.
Yeah.
What anybody thinks of me. I don't have to please nobody. Their opinion doesn't actually affect my happiness.
Yeah. I agree. I think it, for me, it was really like 40 when I turned 40. I was sort of like, I'm just going to do me, you know? And I think up until that time, there was really always sort of a sense of, not that I was denying what I was, but I just didn't really talk about it much and just sort of had my own life out. So I sort of had my work life, my personal life, and then my family life. And it was all sort of three separate things.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you still feel like, well, of course, as a therapist, you still have to have those separate categories, but as a queer person, some of those categories can kind of meet.
Sure, yeah. I mean, professionally, I've actually only had a few therapy clients ask me about my sexuality. Yeah. And I find that those are ones that are very sort of prejudiced against the community. Those who don't really care, or, you know, they may be heterosexual or somewhere outside the community, but they don't really care. It's the ones that have sort of this sort of bad taste in their mouth about the community that will say something. I'm lucky in that I think, you know, most of the clients that I've worked with have really tried to engage with me, sort of build rapport to see who I am instead of just, you know, who I am as a professional, mm-hmm. instead of just who I go home with at the end of the night.
Yeah.
So.
That's pretty fantastic. You're also raising a kiddo.
I am. She's 16, almost 17. You guys pray for me, man. She's a handful. So
yeah.
I'm very lucky because, I'm raising her. I adopted her when she was born. So I've had her from day one, which is interesting because sometimes when I say I have a daughter, people are like, oh, and it kind of throws them like, did you have a baby? And I'm like, no, I mean, there's other ways to have a child. So I have this great kid. And so, you know, I know we were going to talk a little bit about mental health, especially mm-hmm. within our community. So she's a kiddo that struggles. She's diagnosed with bipolar disorder. So that's a good, you know, that makes it fun, added on to teenage angst.
Yeah, that's got to be such an amplifier of all the other surging emotions and hormones that.
You have no idea.
Well, I'm sure I don't.
So, you know, I mean, okay, we're all women. And so our hormones, right, were not fun when we were kiddos, right? Like going through teenage years, like we were not fun people. We thought we were at the time,
uh-huh.
but to everybody around us, we weren't. So you take those emotions and then you add in this mood instability where she doesn't really have control over her mood. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you never know what you're going to get.
So, I bet that's extra fun when you're teaching her how to drive.
Yeah. It is. And, you know, honestly, it's kind of funny. She is a very conscientious driver. Like, because she's very concrete. So if the speed limit says 30, she's going 30. Like, she's not, if you go 31.
She can't go above that.
She can't. And she's not going to go under it. She's going to go right at it. And so she's a very good driver. And so our agreement is that as long as she's taking her medicine and she slept the night before, she can drive. And she has stuck to that agreement. So, but yeah. So raising her in, you know, she likes to attend like Pride and mm-hmm. like she would go to like the glow up shows at Boomerang and things mm-hmm. like that. So she would love all that stuff. And, you know, some people would make remarks, oh, you're raising her to be a lesbian. And I'm like, no, do you think she listens to anything I say? No. You know, she identifies right now as being asexual. She likes men, mm-hmm. But does not want anybody to be near her at any time whatsoever. So, yeah. And that's great for me.
Less to worry about, huh?
Exactly. So yeah, but she's a good kid.
Yeah, I know she's kind of a mama's girl, isn't she?
She is a mama's girl. It's, you know, it's really been just the two of us, mm-hmm. you know, raising her on my own. And I made a promise to her and to myself because of sort of the extra challenges that come along with her and her mental health. So I made a promise that I was not going to start dating again until she turned 18, because I just want to have that time to raise her and yeah. get her through this period. So, and I, you know, I've stuck to that. So it's been fun along the way, but yeah, she is definitely a mama's girl.
Yeah. Yeah. What else do you do for fun, Judy? I mostly just know you through work stuff, so.
For fun? So.
Yeah. Girl. Yeah, Taylor doesn't even, Taylor's getting a taste.
Okay, so a taste of me. So here's my week in a nutshell. So, so is it okay to say like business names on here?
Like colleagues?
No, like names of businesses.
Like where I work.
Yeah, that's fine.
Okay. So I work full time for Hunter Health, and which is actually pretty awesome because we have a really good behavioral health and addiction team there. So I'm doing 40 plus hours a week there. And then I do private therapy for Sunflower Counseling, right? And I was supposed to do 9 hours a week there, and it's turned into
20.
Close to that, yeah. There's a big need for LGBTQ therapists.
Oh, yeah.
And so I find it really hard to say no. When I get a request, you know, like they're like, hey, they're requesting to meet with you. Would you be willing? I don't really have space, but I'll make it work. So yeah. Then I have that. And then I also teach at WSU. So until summer gets here, I don't really have much fun. but, you know, really just my thing is when I'm not working, I try to spend a lot of time with my kiddo because, you know, my thing is feeding back into the next generation.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because that's who's going to be running this place when I no longer can. So I try to be a connection to the younger generation. You know, they have that, I don't know if you've seen on Facebook, they have that thing where you can adopt a senior that was supposed to graduate in 2020.
Oh yeah, I didn't know.
So I got sent a thing to join that group, and I was just kind of scrolling through, and I kept seeing like, oh, here's this, you know, my child is this fantastic 12-sport athlete and got 4.0 GPA, and they're just in every club there is. And I was just like, kept scrolling because I was like, I just wasn't feeling it. And I finally got to this kid that had been up there for a while that identifies as transgender. And I was like, oop, that's the one. Because, you know, I think those are the kids, that's a community that we really need to connect with. So things like GLSEN, if you guys know anything about that. I try to, you know, whenever they have fundraisers or they have events that maybe it's a fundraiser in the community, I try to do that and just sort of be there for that next generation.
That's really cool.
So I don't really have much fun, Megan.
I don't know. I think our jobs are a lot of fun, and people don't know that being a therapist or working in mental health is very entertaining sometimes.
It's super entertaining. And for me, and I think I've told you this before, like the more symptomatic they are, our clients are, and like the more psychotic they are, the more I love them.
Mm-hmm.
Because it is just... you really get down to some real conversations with these folks, even though, you know, I think a lot of times the general public confuses mental health with like mental retardation.
Mm-hmm.
It's two total separate things. And it's really interesting to have a conversation with somebody who has like visual hallucinations or delusions and really talk to them about that and have them explain it to you is the most interesting thing to me. Like the way the brain works is so cool.
Well, even with the people that aren't fully with it because of those symptoms, when you do get them really talking, it's surprising how with it they are. Like, there's people that you underestimate mm-hmm. what they comprehend is going on around them, and then you ask them what they did, and maybe it's just one sentence, you know, one word answers, yep, no. Uh-huh. But it's very, some of it, just even the way that they say, how they say their responses are pretty great,
it's pretty awesome. And the fact that, you know, most of these people don't have anybody in their lives that are supportive, especially the ones you and I have worked with, you know, they're, you know, sort of down and out and been through so much for one, and then have nobody.
Yeah.
And so when you can just be just a support to them and just treat them like a person, mm-hmm. The way they respond to that, it's pretty awesome.
Yeah. All right. With that, we're going to take a small break. Left off talking about mental health. Jerry and I were talking about people that we used to work with and how much fun they are.
A lot of fun.
They are a lot of fun. You know, usually I think with mental health, a lot of the people that I get to work with, I think some of them I don't even think realize that I'm queer. For the longest time, we had a client that would ask me to marry him occasionally. Had no idea. He would just say, did I tell you about this? He would just be like, you know, Megan, can I give you a tip? I think if you grew your hair out, let it get really long, maybe you could get a boyfriend. Then maybe you could get married. That'd be really good, wouldn't it? That was one of the things that he would consistently say, and then I just chuckled, be like, oh, I'm good, thank you.
And I think what's so cool about that is I would imagine that he probably meant absolutely no harm with that.
Oh, no.
That he was just really, you know, having a conversation and was trying to really engage with you. You know, so something like that, I think, is very harmless versus, like, you know, somebody out in public and they're like, hey, why don't you grow your hair out? You know, something like that. It's more judgmental, so.
No, and he and I had really good rapport when he was at the facility. I think, it was me and I think Dennis was the only other person that this person knew our names. So I had a name, and one of our male staffers had a name. Everybody else was nurse, which we're not. We're not nurses.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe on Halloween.
Maybe. I was an old cat lady, and my coworkers were my cats, if you can imagine, our second shift crew. We'll gather around here.
Yeah. That would be pretty fantastic.
You'll have to get Tara to show you the picture. It's probably, I think it's on Facebook. Find it. I'm in my red sweater. I even wore a skirt. The
Fred Rogers sweater.
What's that?
Is it the Fred Rogers sweater?
No, it's the red one, like, that kind of makes you think of Christmas. It's not Christmas necessarily, but I can show you, because we're on video. Our listeners won't be able to see this video, but.
Thank goodness, I didn't dress up for this. Oof.
Yeah, no, I'll strip it from the visual, but it's easier to talk if you can see somebody's face, so.
See different cues. Then, like, all of our meetings at work are no video, and everyone just starts talking over everybody, or nobody says anything.
It helps me, because I like to watch Taylor's face, because sometimes I'll say something outlandish, and she'll react by, like, scrunching up her face or, like, making a funny face, like, I'm just gonna leave that alone, but I find it funny, so And I can fill in audio.
I think, have you guys seen that thing where you can raise money to invite a llama to your Zoom meeting?
Yeah, I saw that.
I heard about that, but I don't know anything.
You can get like a goat or a llama to come to your Zoom meeting, and I keep asking my supervisor to do that.
But isn't that like $1,000?
I mean, I think if we all chipped in, it wouldn't be that much. I think we could do that. I mean, how fun would that be?
I mean, it could be pretty great. I do have an exotic animal of my own way that over there.
That is true. That is true. Ours is under the otter. I've been asking, so like they come around every week and weekish and ask us like, what do you need to do your job better? And I keep saying, I need a therapy otter because I love otters. And if I could have one as a therapy pet, I would be working my tail off all day because I could carry my little otter around.
Is that an actual thing or just a thing that you want to be actual?
It's a thing that I want, but I think if I can make it happen.
Okay.
I mean, I know they're predators and I know they like to sometimes like fling their poop at people, but we could work with that.
Don't humans do that sometimes?
Well, that's true.
Yeah.
At least the otter would have an excuse, right?
Yeah.
In their territory. Yeah.
That's right. I could get like a little baby Bjorn to carry him in and just go see people. I mean, imagine if you come in and you are depressed or you're struggling with addiction and you're having a bad day and I walk in with my otter and my baby Bjorn, how much better would your day be?
It would be significantly better.
But it also depends on what type of otter, because sea otters are cute and river otters look like they're going to eat your face.
Well, it would definitely have to be a cute one. So,
which ones do they have at the Sedgwick County Zoo?
Those are river otters.
And actually, so those are the ones that you don't find cute?
But they're awful cute.
They're cute.
So, I have a painting up there. Because you know me, I like my otters.
I'll be right back.
My sister got me this painting for my birthday, and she had she commissioned a friend of hers to paint Barbara, the otter at the zoo, for me.
Aww.
So I like this oil painting of this otter that hangs over my bed, and I love it.
Oh, that sounds wonderful.
Yeah.
Have you seen those pictures where, like, you can, like, get an artist to commission to paint your, like, pet, like, in a general suit, or, like,
I have seen that. I think that would be fantastic as well.
That's what I want. I would be very much okay with Octavia as like Bonaparte or something.
Ooh. Yeah.
Yeah.
Something like, a cat would totally hate. That's what you gotta paint them in.
You know, and especially like, you know, that famous one of him, like on the horse.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Uh-huh. That's.
You could do that.
But see, as much as, like, I think art's great in all of its forms, if I'm going to buy art, I want it to be massive. So, like,
I just want, like, a massive Bonaparte painting of your cat.
Riding a horse with a sword, gallantly, like, trotting along. Yeah.
That's fair. I think Taylor's like, I missed part of that conversation, and I don't know what they're talking
about. Yeah, I think she's also paying attention to an animal.
There. Ooh, there's a wasp. We have a bee and a wasp problem.
In the house?
Are they murder hornets? They're not murder hornets, are they?
I don't know, but he killed it, so that's all I care about. He's at work still.
Yeah. Did you see, not only are there the murder hornets, but there's also meat bees that make that harvest their neck instead of like flowers for their nectar, they like feast on dead carcasses to make their honey.
That's weird.
I don't know that
I would eat that honey.
Dead carcass honey. I don't know that I want that.
I mean, it's biblical, right? Look, if Samson had carcass honey, why can't also, I?
That is a sea otter, and look how cute it is.
It's beautiful. It's very beautiful. Yes. Yeah. The river otters are a little bit more like dachshund looking.
Mm.
Yeah. You upgraded?
What?
It said I got a little message that said the host upgraded the meeting and we had unlimited minutes.
Oh, they love us. We won't have to do two of these Zoom meetings then. That's all great. Right.
You might want to check on that because I don't know how expensive that is.
Well, I don't think they have my credit card, so we should be good.
That's nice. Thank you, Zoom.
Yeah, thank you, Zoom. Justin, use Zoom. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, don't do that.
Don't do that? Don't endorse them?
Well, I'm not saying don't endorse them, but they have a lot of security issues.
Yeah.
So, like, at work, we're not allowed to do anything on Zoom at all just because of all the security issues they have.
They just have, like, the occasional porn that pops up during meetings and... That's what my daughter's school is using Zoom for their classes, and I keep waiting for that to happen so I can hear her scream because I'm going to be like, yes, I know what just happened.
That would be fantastic. And then you'll ask her about it, and she'll be like, I'm not telling you. You don't want to know.
Yeah, she's still recovering from learning about the birds and the bees, you know, so she's you know, still traumatized by that. Mm. But the way they teach it here in Wichita is so bizarre. Like, did you guys go to school here?
I was homeschooled, so.
Okay.
Oklahoma.
All right. So what they do for these poor kids. So imagine, first of all, if like you're an LGBTQ kiddo, right? They don't take that into consideration. They just send you off the regular sex ed talk. Yeah. Well, for the Wichita schools, they don't just have the talk, right? They take you to this, what I like to refer to as the sex shack, like that's outside like by Halstead or something. Like they take you out of your school, out of your community, and to this little building that I can only imagine looks like something like Deliverance. I didn't go there, but I imagine it in my head. And they separate boys and girls and they do the sex talks. And I'm thinking, how traumatic is that for kids? Why? First of all. So here my kid is, that's a little bit unstable anyway and a little bit anxious. So she came home and I said, how was your day? She's like, I don't ever want to talk about that again. Like, it was just,
you see, you say sex shack and I just think love shack, baby, you know. I just love,
yeah,
shack.
If any
kid goes through that. And they probably got told that if you're gay, you don't actually have sex. So there you go.
That could be, yeah. I just think, you know, they don't address it. And I guess, you know, there's all that argument about it. Well, they're too young in elementary school to understand. But that's not. No. Kids know. And, you know, I can think back to my young childhood and be like, something just doesn't look right when I'm watching TV, when it's a boy and a girl, it doesn't feel right. Like, it takes a while to identify it.
Mm-hmm.
But you know from a very, very young age what's happening inside your body.
Yeah.
So then to take these kids and just assume that, you know, everybody's going to have heterosexual sex is...
Yeah.
A little traumatic.
Yeah, maybe not. I mean, because what? You discover your gender identity between the ages of 3 to 5.
Mm-hmm.
And so whatever you think that it is 3 to 5 is probably what you're gonna come to realize it is when you're older, and you're finally able to think for yourself instead of being told if you don't have supportive family and parents, or heck, maybe even in your 50s you might be a Caitlyn Jenner. I discover way late.
Yeah.
But it doesn't make it not legitimate, so.
No. Yeah. It's a process that's, you know, individualized to everybody. And, you know, one of the classes I teach at WSU is the LGBTQ Issues and Perspectives course. And so one of the things we talk about is the coming out process.
Yeah.
And you know, we can have a pretty lively debate about, you know, should people be forced to come out? Why do we have to come out? What, you know, heterosexuals don't come out and say, hey, I like sleeping with the opposite gender. You know, why is it such a big deal in this community that we're forced to do that? Like, so it's a pretty interesting debate to hear everybody's take on that.
Well, hey, we've got a small break coming up, but then let's keep talking about this.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Hey, welcome to Quad Talk. We're back with Judy. We were talking about LGBT, when people should come out. She teaches a class, and you guys discussed this pretty in depth, and I'm guessing.
Yeah. And, you know, I prefaced it by showing a documentary I found, I think on, I don't know, it was one of the streaming networks, but it talked about the amount of closeted individuals that are in Washington, like in elected offices.
Yeah.
And that many of these closeted individuals then vote against policy that would actually help or protect our community, the LGBTQ community. And so the person that was doing this documentary was like, these people need to come out. They need to be outed. You know, we need to do all these things. And I see you shaking your head, Megan, and that was my exact thing, was like, no, like, I mean, that could be so traumatic to them because...
Well, and it's not safe. Like, no. We talk about safe sex, let's talk about safe coming out. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, I started to embrace my sexuality for me and come to terms with it, because I think I knew the whole time, I just tried to repress it. But I came out when I was 24, mm-hmm. and really only came out, like 25, 26, when I started hanging out with Taylor, and it was an important thing for us to be out together. And so, like, my first girlfriend, she was outed her first semester at college by an acquaintance, and like, she hated that whole experience. Like, her family wasn't ready. I don't know how they're doing about it now, but they blamed all of their social problems just on her being queer because she wasn't ready for it. And it created so much conflict and turmoil in her life that even 6 years later, she hadn't recovered from being outed before she was ready to.
Mm-hmm.
And she's definitely that person that you're talking about, the one that votes against her interests, because I know she was going to vote for Trump that election. And,
yeah.
She probably did. It's crazy, because, yeah.
Yeah, and you're right, it's dangerous. It can be psychologically so harming. You know, not only can it, if you can still continue sort of this process of like grasping your sexual identity, it can be very troublesome, or it's going to shove you right back into the deepest, darkest parts of the closet. First of all, and then you're never going to be happy. I'm sort of that thing. Like, if you don't want to tell everybody your business, don't. You know, sometimes I think maybe I'm just old school, but it's your own business. And like I said, we don't have these, you know, heterosexual coming out parties where, you know, at 13 or 14, you know, little Johnny comes in and says, Mom, Dad, I'm straight and I'm going to bring a girl home. Like, that just doesn't happen. Mm-hmm. So that was such a spirited debate, and I really appreciated like their different opinions. And I think, you know, we really came around to thinking it's sort of they got around eventually to the point of it's an individual process and, you know, why does it matter? But it was interesting that this whole documentary was sort of focused on all these people they wanted outed in Washington. So, but you think about you could lose your job, you could lose your family, not to mention the public shame that would come along with that, because it's not like the press is going to be receptive. Mm-hmm. You know, I think Washington's getting a little bit better, but still, you know, it's we're electing some diversity within the representatives and things like that, but it is still a white man's world there.
And it will be for a while, because change takes time.
Yep. And it's a white Christian heterosexual man's world there.
Yeah, so. don't go be pagan in the Capitol.
I can only imagine the reactions to that.
I'm sure, I don't know, there's probably pagans working within campaigns, but no heads.
That would admit it.
Because they might love the earth and say, let's go green, but...
Yeah, it's about money, it's about politics, and, you know, the longer I've lived, the more I'm like, man, that's some dirty stuff.
For sure. Yeah.
You know, before I went down my path into getting my clinical degree, so way back when, probably before you guys were born, when I graduated college. So I went into mental health initially. And then, so I was a case manager for several years. And then I joined the police department. And so this was like the late 90s when I joined. And it was still very much at that time a man's world, like a good old boy system. And so to be a female and a lesbian on the police department was, it was kind of interesting. Like the remarks I had to put up with and deal with really made me open my eyes a lot to how uncaring people can be. And just, they just want to be hurtful. And it was never like people, what was interesting was it was never people I was arresting or going to make reports on.
As your coworkers.
It was my coworkers. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, I found that, you know, I think a lot of the mental health, I don't mind our clients at all. It's always been, you always have a few stinkers. It doesn't matter how good the helping profession is. It's always the stinkers that make the job hard.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yep. And it's always the one or two. And it's so it's, yeah. There's a lot of change that's been made for sure in my lifetime that I can see. I mean, our community has come a very long ways. And so the ones that are growing up now and coming into themselves at this age, I'm happy for them, you know, because I think it's a little bit easier. It's, you know, people say, oh, it's easy now being a part of this community. No, it's easier.
Yeah.
I would say that, but it's not easy by any means.
Yeah.
So I'm happy that that's happening. And so I want this like younger generation to keep growing that and keep advocating for themselves.
And I really think they're going to, because kind of like you were talking about, like you think that you're cool when you're a teenager and then you're a holy nightmare in reality. I see that now and I'm like, oh my gosh, I am friends with this 19-year-old trans kid and I'm just like, oh, I don't know about this post, but I support you because you're gonna grow and you're gonna become something great. But right now you scare me a little, but
it's that whole development of the frontal brain, you know, the frontal lobe here has to, you know, it's not fully cooked until, you know, close to your mid-20s.
Yeah.
So you still kind of throw out, like you said, some zingers and some posts that when you're younger, and then as you go back and you when you get a little bit older and you start reading those memories, you're like, ooh, I probably shouldn't have said that. Like,
yeah. But also, you know, a lot of these kids, you know, they have the right idea and they're going the right direction. They're just, some of what they say is a little,
you should have vetted
that just a little bit.
I'm proud of this younger generation because they're way more outgoing and bold than I ever was. Just because I know society's changed a little bit. But still to do that first step, to take that initial step and say, this is what I am. It's very, very, it's hard no matter how accepting of a community you live in. Mm-hmm. So for them to do that, you know, if any of them are listening, they should feel proud of themselves and keep supporting, you know, the next person.
Yeah.
Because that's the only way we improve mental health in our community, supporting each other.
Well, and like I'm sure you've studied resiliency a whole lot. Mm-hmm. And it's really weird when you get down to what makes a person resilient, it's really their community. Like, your strengths are the people that help you. Mm-hmm. When you can't go any further, it's your community. It's the people that you know. It's the person that you can say, hey, can you support me some gas money? Can you buy me a meal? Can you just be on the phone and say nothing with me for a good hour just because I need to know somebody is there that helps you get through it and be resilient? And it's definitely all about community support.
I wholeheartedly agree with that statement. You know, even just listening, you know, especially with like these teens and these kiddos, you know, about can you just listen to me because my parents won't let me start hormones, you know, if they identify as transgender, you know. And so, you know, that's frustrating. And especially like as a therapist, like I want to listen. I want to be there for them. You know, but when you look at, especially with like transgender youth, especially, you know, when you think about they estimate about 60% of that population has at one time in their life contemplated suicide or taken steps to attempt suicide.
Yeah.
60%. That's a huge number. And it's really because, first of all, not only are you coming out as part of the LGBTQ community, you're also coming out as, I don't identify with the gender that you're telling me I am.
Mm-hmm.
There's another whammy. Plus, I want to start hormones, which is this whole other thing. And so it's understandable. And so it goes right back to what you said, Megan, that we just really got to have support for one another. And I'll tell you the one thing that irritates me, and it's irritated me since I was a young kid, is that, you know, we have the rainbow flag as our symbol of our community because we want to be all inclusive and accept to everybody. But we can't accept ourselves. Like, we infight so much.
Well, and I think that goes back to this weird, like, LGBT really is this minority, because that's something that I think where you're not a majority person in some aspect, there's this internal self-hatred that you, through society, are taught to hate yourself for this very thing that you are. Like, if you're trans, that was not a choice. It might be a choice to transition, hopefully. Not that it always is, but having those feelings, knowing that something doesn't connect right and that things should be different, you should be in a different body, you don't connect with the body that you're in, that's not a choice.
Very much so. And I think we got to get this community feeling. We've got to, because the general public doesn't really like us, right? No. I mean, not everyone. I'm not saying everyone in the general public, but majority, you know, doesn't really like our community. We have to love ourselves a lot more than we do, and we have to love the person next to us a lot more than what we do. And that is the only way we're going to continue to move forward in this. And this back and forth fighting amongst ourselves is just ridiculous. It's got to stop.
Yeah.
That was my little soapbox. I'm done.
No, I like it. Let's go to one more break and then we'll wrap up and we'll keep talking about this. Hey, we're back. Welcome to Quack Talk. We were talking about LGBT issues. We're especially talking about trans issues here, and about accepting one another, which I think is definitely one of the most critical things that we can do as an LGBT person or any straight people listening to this. Is you should support your trans, maybe the most, even, I don't know, because trans is very interesting because they're both the population group that has pushed for the most LGBT rights and done the most to give us rights, especially in the Black community, but also they are the most hated and discriminated against and the most at risk for developing mental health because they don't have the resources and the support.
Absolutely. You know, it was the trans community, the drag queens that led the way after, you know, the riots. And they're the ones that really push for change. And you, like you said, there's so much legislation, you know, that has been gained and put in place to protect the transgender community. So we need to take a lesson from them. That is such a vulnerable population within our population. And so to support that community, support them, try to help them as much as we can. You know, finally, insurances are starting to come around to cover the gender confirmation surgery. So that's fantastic. But the hoops you have to jump through in order to get that is ridiculous. Right, because
you have to go to a counselor for like what, a year?
At least a year.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have to, well, and I'm sure every insurance is different.
They sign off on it.
Yeah. So I'm working with a couple of clients right now. So for example, one of them has been in therapy in the past, like for like a 5-year stint, has been doing really well, no problems, perfectly well functioning in society. Unless you ask them if they were transgender, you would not know because, you know, they've already started hormones. They're just waiting for the surgery. Mm-hmm. So this person who is very stable, doing just fine, now has to go through a year of therapy with me. So now they're being forced to sit with me for a year, which is going to make anybody a little off. Just ask Megan. So, and then they have to have like a psych eval done. So they have to meet with somebody else to do a psychological.
Obviously, you're not qualified to give that already.
Right. After I've met with this person
for a year.
Right. So it's just another hoop that you have to get this psychological eval. And then, you know, you have to have lived in your, as they say, desired gender for like 5 years before. And presented yourself in that gender and that people recognize you as that gender for 5 years so that, you know, it's not something that's just, oh, surprise. Now I've had gender confirmation surgery and all of a sudden I'm a different sex. Right. You know, so it's all these hoops. And so, yes, they're covering it. They still try to make it difficult. I think it's frustrating.
And that's just that's just a medical hoop. Like, there's also legal hoops.
Right. So then you've got your name change. You got your documents.
Driver's license. Yep. Documentation. Change your social security. Change your
everything. And then think, like, if you're, you know, like with me, like if I'm a therapist and I go through surgery and then I'm ready to change my name. Well, then I've got to change my licensure and I've got to change my degree and everything to match. So yeah, it's so much to go through. I know WSU is starting to recognize that, instead of just going under your birth name, if you have like a dead name that you don't want to use, they will use your confirmed name.
Yeah.
So that's nice.
Yeah.
I don't know how that would work for any type of licensing though, unless you've legally changed your name. So
yeah,
it'd be interesting. So there's strides being made.
Yeah. But we still have to keep doing that thing.
We do. There's a lot more we can do, but yeah. I definitely think if we look to the person next to us and try to take care of them and take care of this upcoming generation, it's going to improve our mental health so much.
Oh yeah.
It's going to reduce the amount of addiction that's within our community because, I mean, let's face it, addiction is super high in our community because self-hatred, not being accepted, loss of family and friends. Yeah. Plus, where else are you going to hang out except a bar here in Wichita, right?
Yeah.
You know, it's not like they have
the sober bars.
Yeah, the sober bar, or it's not like they have, you know, borders for lesbians or something like that, you know?
I'm into that, though.
Yeah.
I'm down.
Or we could have, like, bingo, you know? I know they have bitchy bingo, but, like, bingo or, you know, something, you know?
Something that's more than just once a month or, right. Again, like at a bar. Because even bitchy bingo is going to be at, you know, XY. It's going to be at Rain. Mm-hmm. It's going to be at...
Yeah.
So, an adult spot.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, like, that's one of the things I've always thought, you know, like, they've tried, when I was in my early 20s, they tried to open up, like, a couple of restaurants here in town that were LGBTQ, you know, run and supportive. And, of course, at that time, it wasn't really accepted.
Yeah.
But, you know, having restaurants, having, like, here at this gym, you could go work out at this gym and it's only for our community.
Yeah.
You know, things like that. But unfortunately it really revolves around the bars and the party scene and it's, the addiction rate is high and our mental health is poor.
Well, and again, it's really like just that whole acceptance piece reduces so much of that mental health. So I keep thinking about, what is it? It's, if a trans person experiences one person that accepts them as their gender, like their risk of suicide goes down by like 70%.
Yep, that's actually correct. Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. So just that's why I say just reach out, look at your neighbor, just listen, you know. And so, like, when I'm teaching class at WSU or when I'm, like, training up-and-coming clinicians, now I'm by no way saying I know everything about being a therapist, not in the least. But the one thing that I do try to tell them is, you know, our practice is client-driven.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's not what goals I think that client needs to achieve. It's what goals they want to achieve.
Yeah.
And so sometimes our values may collide a little bit. So there's a difference between working with someone and accepting them for who they are and just supporting where they're at.
Yeah. Right?
Doesn't mean I have to agree with them, but I can sure support them and be a supportive person to them. So I think even if you are the most homophobic person out there, you can at least stop and listen and just let somebody talk to you who needs somebody to talk to.
Yeah. Well, and I think the other thing is even me trying to learn how to mentor people or teach people, even things like guitar, violin, or whatever, is as somebody that has tried to give people guidance, if you try to mold them into the person you think that they need to be, they aren't going to mm-hmm. accept that kind of support. They're going to run from you. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, you lose that opportunity to actually help them.
Yeah.
Yeah. Coming from the other side of this, because I am not a social worker, I am obviously not a therapist, but I am in therapy. It's really, to me, important to hear you say that it's not about the therapist's goals, it's about the person's goals, because those are going to be completely separate things. And yeah. just knowing that thought is at least out there makes me feel better, even though I love my therapist and she's great, but it makes me feel more comfortable, because when I came out to her, I didn't know how she was going to react.
Yeah.
And even though it's a therapist and, you know, it's supposed to be neutral, it shouldn't matter. You can't guarantee that.
Yeah.
So that was really important to me just now.
Well, good. Yeah. I'm glad that helped. But yeah, I mean, it has to be. And if, you know, and I always tell my clients, if there's something about me you don't like, you should really find a different therapist, because it's not about me being comfortable with you. It's about you being comfortable with me.
Yeah.
And, but you know, I think like you were saying, Taylor, is rather interesting, because I have another therapy client that is, you know, early 20s and was scared to tell me that they identified as transgender and actually text it to me. Couldn't bring it up in a session, but text it to me, because that's a safe way to do it. Mm-hmm. And that's so sad, because I mean, I know the people listening can't see me, but I am not the picture of femininity. So, I mean, to look at me, so to look at me, you know, it's pretty obvious where my sexuality is, right? So for this young person to still struggle with somebody who's a part of the same community as them to say, mm-hmm. this is how I identify, I can't even imagine what you went through. I don't know who your therapist is or how they identify, but to just be able to say that to somebody else, mm-hmm. it's so difficult. So, but I think we have to find somebody that we can all reach out to.
Yeah.
And for me, like, I had been in therapy for about a year, so I knew who I was, and I was very firm in where I'm at in my life right now, and what, like, identifying as being bi and also being ace. And so for me, it's not like, oh, I have to fight with myself to, like, put that out there, because I'm already firm in it. So when you think about the people who aren't at that point, or they're just trying to figure it out, and, like, they have a therapist, which is great, but not knowing how to convey that, and especially if you don't know their sexuality, I can just imagine how incredibly hard that would be.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and I think that's why it's also very, very important that people are certified to work with LGBT individuals and to have that upfront, because, you know, all therapists should be certified to work with LGBT individuals, because it's not about what the therapist's views and opinions and values are to instill those things. It's about helping that person come up with ways to solve their own problems and empowering them. But it's good for people that, you know, need a therapist, want a therapist, that don't know anything about the, so, you know, the therapist world, the different licensing, all the different techniques that therapists know and are trained in, to be able to say, oh, this person works with LGBT individuals and is supportive and embracive. Like, mm-hmm. when you introduced me to the minister, you know, mm-hmm. that I ended up kind of having a few conversations that helped me theologically come to terms with being okay with my sexuality. Mm-hmm. It was important for me to know that she would accept me as an LGBT member, even if she wasn't, just because I knew I couldn't go back to not accepting myself. Like, mm-hmm. that was not acceptable. Yeah. So having it right out there in the open,
and having more of our community out there in these professions and just reaching out to support is, you know, and getting connected is very important. And, you know, to mention that you can Google the LGBTQ health coalition.
because you can also find them on like Psychology Today. They have a whole list. That's where I've gone and where my siblings and I, when we talk about, hey, are we gonna look for a therapist for this, that, or the other thing? Mm-hmm. Maybe go check out that website.
Yeah, so Psychology Today. So I'll tell you this, they're fantastic because now I have my profile up there too, but you can literally just go down and check any box you want. So you could check LGBTQ friendly, right? Or it works with LGBTQ community. But that doesn't necessarily mean that you're supportive of that community. Mm. I do think I will say this. I have a suspicion there's been a few people that have checked that because they want to try to talk people out of being in that community. So what I suggest is there's the LGBTQ Health Coalition website here in Wichita. You actually have to be, you have to request to be put on that website. So you have to reach out to them and then they vet your application. When I asked to be put on their website, you know, I had to fill out a whole bunch of information. They double check, you know, they make sure that you're not just trying to cause more harm. So that's where I would suggest, because you can do, it's all different types of providers, not just therapists. So
yeah, that's awesome.
It's a little thing about Psychology Today.
Yeah.
Good, it really reminded me though of family planning centers.
Yes.
Yeah. There were lots of air quotes because I know this is not going to be a video, but it they were there.
Mm-hmm. Okay. There's a lot of interesting things. Like, yeah, I can check that box. That doesn't mean I like those people. Mm-hmm. Maybe I can help them see the light, right? So that's why I was saying, make sure, and you as the client, and I'm saying this to everybody listening, you as the client, when you go in for services, like I said, if you don't like that therapist, leave.
Mm-hmm.
And find somebody. There are plenty of us out there that want to help. Find somebody you're comfortable with.
Well, it's way too much money if you don't feel comfortable and you don't feel helped, mm-hmm. to be going, spending $50 an hour or $60, $100, $200, whatever you're paying.
And even if you know, like with the clinic where I work, even with private insurance, like depending on your deductible, like there's one gal that pays over $100 per session. And for me personally, that's a lot of pressure on me because I want to get you your money's worth. Like I want to give you everything I got in that hour. So sometimes, you know, my clients are like, whoa, that's enough handouts for today. But I'm like, no, there's more. You know, I feel like the guy on TV, but wait, there's more. You know, so you need to find somebody that you really click with.
Yeah. Well, hey, with that, I think that's the end of our show. So, yeah.